Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo!
Bernsie, what's going on?
Not much, my friend. You looking forward to some NBA?
I really am.
So some what, NBA play-in action tonight? You looking forward to that?
Yeah. What do we got? 4:30 Lakers-Pelicans, and then 7 o'clock Warriors-Kings. Who do you want to win? Who do you want to win?
Oh, boy. Who do I think is best suited to take out the Denver Nuggets in the first round? And that's a really dumb question because no one's taking out the Denver Nuggets in the first round.
Just who do you want to root for?
Who do I want to root for? I want to root for the Pelicans to win tonight, and I want to root for the Kings to win.
Too.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Tired of LeBron, tired of Steph, been around a long time. Give me some new blood.
Pelicans and the Kings to get those spots. You the same way?
Too.
The same way?
Same way.
Yeah. New blood. Yeah, give me some else in there.
I think the Pelicans will win. I don't think the Kings will win because I don't trust the Kings. That's just the team you just can't trust.
You have trust issues with them.
You cannot trust the Kings. I mean, you cannot trust the Kings.
So you're saying Friday night, LeBron versus Steph, winners in, losers out.
Let's go.
Game.
Let's go.
Wow.
I like that. Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that's got to give Adam Silver nightmares, right? Like, here's two of his biggest stars, and one of them's not going to be in. One of them's not going to be in the first round of the playoffs.
What are you going to do?
I know. It's just a nightmare. I think it's a nightmare.
I don't think it is. I was reading something today that NBA ratings were up. Okay, let me just find this. Like, they're just up. Like, everybody's 22.5 million most attended regular season in NBA history. The NBA today announced new all-time records for regular season total attendance, average attendance, percentage of capacity, and sellouts. Now, it's not TV ratings, but, like, the brand is popular.
The brand is doing well, whether Steph's... And I mean, look, we talk about LeBron. Zion's a star, too. And De'Aaron Fox is a star. Maybe not a star to the level of Steph Curry or LeBron James or Anthony Davis. But yeah, there are plenty of stars to go around. And I think you're right. People will watch. I got to imagine if the league... Not that the league's going to do anything about it, but if the league had a preference, they would not want LeBron and Steph not around for the playoffs. All right, we have that to get into because those games are this afternoon and tonight. We'll talk Suns basketball as well. Yusef Nurkic is scheduled to join us today at 3 o'clock. Yeah, looking forward to that very much. So let's get you caught up on what's going on in sports. Let's tell you what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
The 0-1. In the dirt, it skips away from Moreno to the right. And now rounding third, trying to score is Harder. The throw to the plate is not in time. Cubs tie it on a wild pitch.
Oh, boy.
A wild pitch where a run is scored from second. I was at the game last night, and, you know, I think my wife had texted me like, okay, I'm just about over. I start to pack everything up. You know what that's like. You've been in those situations. 2-1 lead in the ninth. You start to, like, okay, unplug the iPad, take the charger out, put everything in the bag. Okay, got my notes. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to hit the elevator, go down, talk to Tori Lovello, go into clubhouse. I'm ready, right? I'm ready. And then, boom. Uncorks a wild pitch, runner scores from second. I'm like, okay, let's take everything back out.
Play everything back in.
You've been there.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know what it's like.
Although there were some years there, the Jose Valverde years, the years where they tried to go cheap on closers. You know, every single year they'd bring in guys like Fernando Rodney and guys. There were years like that where it's like, you know what? I'm not going to unpack it. I'm not going to pack everything up. Something tells me this is going to go bad in the ninth inning. I don't think Ginkle's on that level, but he talked after the game about that wild pitch that he uncorked.
You know, I think leading up to that, I feel terrible for not getting out of that spot. It shouldn't have come to that. But, you know, that's baseball. It's just kind of a weird play. It just bounced off Gabby on a weird spot and went to, you know, the furthest spot from the plate. So I was almost debating going and running and getting it. So it was just a weird play, and I feel terrible.
Here's what's weird to me about that loss, and you said that you were there. I mean, the natural instinct when a closer blows a save is to say, his fault, his fault, his fault. Bullpen fault, bullpen fault, bullpen fault. The bullpen last night, six innings, six hits, one earned run, three walks, six strikeouts. The bullpen was terrific last night. They were terrific last night. But that one, and Bryce Jarvis, okay, he allowed the ghost runner to score, but he was great. He was really, really good. Those ghost runners are going to score much of the time. Maybe not most of the time, but much of the time. The bullpen was phenomenal last night, and yet that's another game that gets tagged to the bullpen. And we've had a lot of conversations about the bullpen so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, overall, the numbers are not bad. I mean, their ranking is not bad, but the blown saves, the losses from the bullpen, it's pretty high. But if you look at the numbers in the National League compared to everything else, and then you know, just look at, you know, the games. I mean, they've lost a 6-5 game, another 6-5 game, a 9-8 game, a 3-2 game, another 3-2 game. I mean, you look at the amount of one-run losses they've had. 3-2 to the Cubs. 3-2 to Colorado. They won 3-2 to Colorado. They lost 9-8 to Atlanta. They lost 6-5 to Atlanta. They lost 6-5 to the Yankees. So those ones come back to hurt you, you know. But there were opportunities, right? There were opportunities for that offense to get going last night. It didn't happen. They lose 3-2 and 11, but they had chances. You know, Goriello's been great at driving in runs. Lifts a fly ball to short right, and they don't send the runner to tag up. But it probably would have been out. Lavello talked about that after the game. I thought that Randall Grichuk probably should have bunted, and I asked Lavello about that after the game, and he said he's not a bunter. That just makes me think, like, my God, Mickey Mantle used to bunt. Like, how could you not know how to bunt? No, I just really, like, he's not a bunt. What do you mean he's not a bunt? Is he a major league player? Yeah, then he should know how to bunt. Does he not practice? Is he, like, exempt from bunting? Because to me, I mean, and Lavello said, no, he doesn't bunt. Other guys, yes, he'll bunt. But there was a situation when in the bottom of the 10th, Suarez on second, they walk Moreno. First and second, nobody out. I'm moving the runners over with a bunt. Now, they don't do it, and he ends up striking out. Now, he strikes out because he's facing a righty. How many times is he going to face a righty this year? Not many.
Not
he's
very
in
many
here to
times,
face
yeah.
left-handed pitching. So, to me, bunt the freaking ball. But, you know, again, I mean, I guess there are players in Major League Baseball that just, they don't bunt anymore.
It's 2024. That's how the game goes these days. Yeah, it's 2024. We're just going to have to deal with that and get used to it. I think.
I didn't know the guy was, I got to hit 40 home runs a year and drove an 120. I didn't know.
We're 17 games into the season for the Diamondbacks. They're 8-9 after losing last night to the Cubs 3-2. And I think if I'm going to hit zoom out and look at the season as a whole so far, I think the biggest issue for this team, and I don't think I'm going out on much of a limb by saying this, their inability to hit and score runs in the late innings of these games. It has been the problem all year. And unfortunately, in some regards, the bullpen has had to wear that a little bit. The bullpen last night was a classic example. But throughout the course of the season, I mean, last night, the Diamondbacks, after Carroll gives them the lead in the eighth inning, the Diamondbacks didn't get a hit the rest of the game. They were 0-9 the rest of the game. The Diamondbacks, seventh inning or later, have scored just 13 runs so far this season. That's 27th in Major League Baseball. That is the defining problem, because if they're even league average after the seventh inning, you know, I would suspect that their record is kind of what we would expect it to be, that they're like, you know, 10-8, 10-7, something along those lines. But because they've had such a hard time scoring runs late in games, and last night was a perfect example, that starts to bleed over into other areas, like not getting wins and your bullpen struggles, because the margin for error is so small when this team takes the field.
Yeah, and I think we're going to learn a lesson from the Suns here, you know, this season. Look, I mean, we can sit here and complain that they're a 500 team, and oh my God, they should be better. They went out and added all this talent, and they should be better than they were last year. Look, they're dealing with a lot of injuries right now. Their closer's out, two of their starters are out, their center fielder's been out. Like, it's the shortstop's out. Like, it's tough. Like, hang around as long as you can, as long as you get in. Got to get in. Last year, they were a wild card team that went to the World Series. So, you know, I think we're learning that about sports, you know, as we go along. Just, you know, there's a lot of panic meters that go on throughout the course of the regular season. And I'm not saying that they're not warranted, because sometimes they are, but then sometimes they're not. I think this Diamondback baseball team is going to be fine. I think, again, I think like I've done with the Sun, a lot of talent on this team. I can't imagine they're not going to be there in the end.
Enter to win an exclusive NFL draft experience by texting the word draft to 62620. To enter for the chance to win a reserved table and $200 in food and beverage credit at Flinker's Kitchen and Sports Bar inside the BetMGM Sportsbook, all while having a front row seat at our live broadcast as we await the Cardinals' first pick. Again, text the word draft to 62620 right now. When we come back, there are reasons to believe in the Phoenix Suns given the matchup. There are reasons to believe that this season isn't going to go very well in the playoffs for the Phoenix Suns. We'll give you a reason why you might be a little skeptical about this team next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Arizona Sports 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app.
It's time now. It starts now.
Burns and Gambo talk Suns Timberwolves now.
Game one coming up on Saturday. We still don't know a time. Still don't know the rest of the schedule for the series. I imagine the NBA partially is kind of waiting to see what happens tonight to see who's playing the Denver Nuggets. And if it's the Lakers Nuggets, that might impact the time and everything else. So we're in a bit of a holding pattern. We do know that it's going to be on Saturday. We don't know when the rest of the schedule is going to be. We're all very excited about it, Gambo, though the Suns as the sixth seed. And I remember our buddy John Hollinger over at The Athletic writing about this a lot over the last couple of years. And I remember you and I talking about it a lot over the last couple of years. Typically, generally speaking, you're going to weigh this thing in terms of your chances to win a championship by whether you're one of the top three seeds in your conference. And if you're not one of the top three seeds in your conference, history just says you don't have as good a shot of winning a championship. So much so that we went back and looked, and with a little help from our friends over Bright Side of the Sun, only two teams in the history of the NBA have made the NBA Finals as a sixth seed. Wow. Only one team in the history of the NBA has won a championship as a sixth seed in the NBA Finals.
So only once in the history has a team as the sixth seed gone on to win it all.
Only one time. And
okay. Well, so that doesn't mean it hasn't been done.
So all right, I'm hearing the, so you're saying there's a chance. Yes, I'm telling you there's a chance. There is a chance. Right. It's only happened once. Now, you know, just to give you the example of what I'm talking about, number one seeds have won the title 51 times. Number two seeds have won it 16 times. Number three seeds have won it 8 times. The other seeds combined, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, have combined to win 2 NBA championships total. 2. So history very much weights on number one, number two, or number three. But the Suns, and that team, by the way, unfortunately, there's a tie here. A local tie. It was the 1995 Houston Rockets, and that was the Mario Elie kiss of death in Game 7 against the Phoenix Suns. Were you hadn't moved here yet for that, had you?
No.
You weren't here for that.
I always tell you, my first memory of being a resident here was seeing the billboard. We just added a little Rocket Field. God, I would love to somebody had a picture of that, but I don't even know if we had camera phones back then. But we just added a little Rocket Fuel, and it had a picture of the 4 Rocket players that were added. So I did not see Barkley play here, but I do remember that billboard as I was driving into Phoenix for the very first time.
I remember that game like it was yesterday. It was a long time ago. I don't remember every detail about that game, but I remember how that game made me feel when Mariola hit that shot and blew that kiss right towards the Suns bench. That team was a 6th seed. That team went on to go win the NBA championship, and that's how rare this is for the Suns.
Well, if you go back to last year, there was a 6th seed in the East. It was Brooklyn. They got swept in 4 games. The 6th seed in the West was actually Golden State, and they beat Sacramento in a 7-game series and then lost the next round. So in the West, the 6th seed did win over the 3 seed last year, Golden State, Sacramento. And I think you may look at this very similar. Sacramento is the 3 last year, young, up-and-coming team, not a lot of experience. Minnesota is the 3, young, up-and-coming team, not a lot of experience. 6-seed Golden State, a lot of experience, championship pedigree. 6-seed Phoenix, a lot of experience, some championship pedigree. you know, with Kevin Durant. And so I do think that there's some similarities between the 6-3 last year in the West and the 6-3 this year.
I think that's a really good point, actually, because I don't know. I don't believe that the Phoenix Suns are your garden variety six seed. I don't even know if there's such a thing as a garden variety six seed. The Suns, we all know the story. We all know the roster. We all know the talent. We all know what happened this year. I don't know if the Phoenix Suns, if there's such a thing as a typical six seed in a conference, I don't know if the Suns fit that. And I like your Warriors comp because the Warriors, I also think they weren't. In fact, in some ways, the Warriors are a great comp, not only because of the Warriors, but because of the team that they're playing, right? Last year, the Warriors were going up against the Sacramento Kings, a team that in some ways, is kind of a comp to this year's Minnesota Timberwolves team a little bit, right? Yeah, right. Like a team that had a wonderful regular season, kind of redefined themselves during the regular season, set a high expectation, and then when they got in the postseason,
couldn't do it
against an experienced veteran club that had been there, done that, and all of that, they couldn't do it. They couldn't hold up. So I think
lost game seven at home.
Yeah, right. And that's what everyone's making a big deal about tonight with the rematch in the 9-10 play-in game, that it's a rematch of that series. They couldn't get the job done at home because Steph Curry dropped 50 on them in that game seven a year ago.
Yeah, and I think that Golden State team, obviously more championship pedigree than the Suns, but the Suns, Devin Booker has been to an NBA Finals. Kevin Durant has been an NBA Finals MVP twice. So there is experience. Nurkic has plenty of experience. Beal doesn't have a lot of playoff experience, but he has some. I think you mentioned yesterday he hasn't been out of the first round since 2017 when he was like 22 years old. No, seriously, I think he was 22 or 23 years old. So, Eric Gordon's got tons of playoff experience under his resume. Royce O'Neal has some. So, there are guys with playoff experience on the roster and championship pedigree and things like that. But I think it's somewhat similar. Now, I think you would point out something too. The Suns have been the sixth seed three times in their history.
Yeah, according to the Brightside story I was looking at today, the Suns have finished with the sixth seed three times in their history. A couple of them will remember very well. One that goes way, way back to even when I was a kid. The most recent time they were the sixth seed was the 2007-2008 season. That was the year Sean Marion was traded to the Miami Heat. Shaq and the Suns lost to the Spurs in the first round as a sixth seed. Now, that to me was a sixth seed. That team didn't have any chance. That to me was a sixth seed. That there was no reason to put any hope on that team. At least the way I remember it, I don't remember feeling great about that team or their chances going into the playoffs.
Shaq could not deliver a playoff series win for the Phoenix Suns, could he?
No, he could not. The other time they were a sixth seed that we will kind of remember was backcourt 2000. Penny and Kidd, back in the 01 postseason, lost to Peja, Chris Webber, and the Sacramento Kings.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so you have to go
back. That was a good Sacramento team. What was it, the Maloof brothers that owned that team? They were trying to put those billboards up to keep Weber. They didn't want to lose Chris Weber.
Yeah, and the cowbell and all that stuff and that series against the Lakers. Yeah, those were really good Sacramento Kings. Sometimes I'm surprised those teams didn't win a championship. Now, you talk about being bullish, not being bullish on the Suns. TheRinger.com through their simulation machine. I was really surprised. I know, right? I was surprised by this. They simulated the postseason. They believe the Phoenix Suns have a 27% chance of winning in the first round, 10% chance of winning in the second round, 3% chance of winning the conference finals. For comparison, they think the Minnesota Timberwolves have a 73% chance of winning in the first round, a 25% chance of going to the NBA Finals. They give the Minnesota Timberwolves the third best odds of winning the championship behind only the Boston Celtics and Oklahoma City Thunder.
Right, right.
Ahead of the Nuggets. Ahead of the Clippers. Ahead of a bunch of teams in the West that you would think would have a better chance. I was shocked when I saw this today.
So this was crazy. Teams with only a 1% chance to win the NBA Finals. Clippers, Pelicans, Knicks, Suns, Sixers, Bucks, Cavs, Magic, the Mavs, is that 1% for the Mavs?
Less than 1%.
Mavs, Heat, Warriors, Lakers, Kings, Bulls, Hawks, less than 1%. So basically they're saying there's one team that has a chance to win the NBA Finals. It's Boston. They've got a 65% chance to win the Finals. Oklahoma City is a far distant second at 13%. Minnesota at 8. Denver at 5. The Pacers at 2. Everybody else is 1%. I looked at it. And I was like, I screenshot. I put it in there. Welcome to the NBA odds machine. Daily predictions. The calculations are based on team strength as measured by point differential, a historically strong predictor of future success with adjustments for individual wrinkles like injuries. And that's how they factored it in. It's crazy.
That was crazy. That's why they play the games, Gambo, as a wise person once said. That's why they play the games. We've got the Burns and Gambo Show podcast. You can subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You won't miss our show. You can listen to us whenever you want. The Burns and Gambo Show podcast brought to you by Carol Has the Buyers, your home sold guaranteed realty. We are inching closer and closer to the NFL draft. Who's the better option for the Cardinals, Marvin Harrison Jr. or someone, something else? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
D-backs, Cubs. Don't miss pregame coverage of Game 2 of the series tonight at 6 on Arizona Sports 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app.
All right, welcome back here on the Burns and Gambo Show. It's with all of the Coyotes news that Gambo has broken over the last several shows, the last couple of weeks, with all of the focus on the Diamondbacks and, of course, the Suns and their push to get out of the play-in tournament. We actually have not spent a ton of time talking about the NFL draft the last few shows because of all those things that we've been focused on. It's coming. It's coming quick. It's a week from this Thursday. The rumors are going to start to get hot and heavy. We're really going to start to focus in on this thing, I think, starting next week and find out, you know, what the Cardinals' intentions are to stay put and take Marvin Harrison Jr. and or to trade out with some offer from Minnesota or somebody else to come up and get J.J. McCarthy. If you do kind of the wind test, you know, to see which way the wind is blowing. I know I've got the bet with Mitch right now, and I've got the offer to you to make the bet as well. It definitely feels like the wind right now is kind of blowing in the direction of, hey, don't be stupid. Take Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 4, right? Like that feels like kind of the way the breeze is going right now. Like, what are you, nuts? It's Marvin Harrison Jr. Just take him at 4. What are we thinking about here, right?
It is, but the one trade that you could really say, okay, I'm on board with this is a trade with the Giants, because a trade with the Giants allows you to get Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze or who knows, maybe even Marvin Harrison Jr. But trading down just those two spots to pick up some extra inventory, now is it worth it if Marvin Harrison Jr. ends up becoming a Hall of Fame wide receiver and you passed on him and you just got a good wide receiver but not a great one? Then no, then it's not worth it. But it is something you've got to think about, because if you love all three wide receivers and you're happy with any one of them and somebody's willing to give you a couple extra picks, maybe a second and a fourth, you might say, okay, we got a lot of needs. You know, we need an extra running back. We need a cornerback. We need defensive line help. We need an offensive tackle. Like, we need a lot of things. I might want to draft the safety because who knows what's going to happen with Buddha. Like, you start to get into all of those factors and you could understand why a team values the excess picks, the extra picks, to have more shots at trying to build that roster.
Yeah, and it's, we'll talk more about this a little later on in the show, but just to let everybody know, and it's a mock draft, and mock drafts are, you know, again, not the most accurate thing in the world, but we haven't seen a lot of mocks that have suggested the thing that you were just talking about a second ago. Today, we finally got one from Peter Schrager, from the Good Morning Football, the NFL Network, and Fox. He put out his mock draft, and he had the Giants moving up two spots so that they could get J.J. McCarthy, the Cardinals moving down to 6 and getting Roma Dunze, and in exchange, they get a third this year and a second next year to move down two spots. So those you know, extra swings of the bat that you're talking about. But here's a cut I wanted to play for you, because I knew you'd like it, and I knew you'd get a reaction. I'd get a reaction out of you from it. And this is Lance Zierlein today. He's a draft expert from NFL.com. He was a guest on the Bickley and Murata show. And he said, look, one thing is very, very clear. Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, they're all really, really good. And more importantly, they're all on a different level than anybody else in this draft at the position. I'll let him explain.
Marvin is the most polished. The most explosive is Malik Nabers. And then the best ball winner is Roma Dunze. And so depending on, all of them have good size. Depending on what you covet, what you prioritize, as a team, as a philosophy, an organizational philosophy, you may have different feelings. There's plenty of teams that have Malik Nabers ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. So this is, but I think everyone will tell you it's pretty close that those three are clearly in a different level.
Those three are clearly in it. So when you start talking about trading down, do we take Brian Thomas? Do we take, you know, the Texas kid? You know, if you want elite, it sounds like one of those three is elite. And if you're not in a position to grab one, you're not going to get elite.
Here's the interesting thing. There are plenty of teams that have Malik Nabers rated ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, look, if you're one of those teams and you've got them both rated so high, you trade down with the Giants like Schrager suggested. And you go down, Giants take a quarterback at 4. If the Chargers take a wide receiver at 5, you're still going to get one of those two. You're still going to get one of those two guys. And you add those extra picks. I think most of the fan base can live with that if that's the way it breaks down.
A trade down with the Giants? I think most of the fan base could. I think there's going to be, and I don't even want to put a number on it. I'm not sure what number I would put on it. I think there's going to be a segment of the fan base that's going to be good and pissed off they don't take Marvin Harrison Jr. That they don't just stay put at number 4 and take this, and they will be upset that they didn't do that. I don't know what number that is. 25%, 35%, I have no idea. But I think most will look at it and go, if it were to happen with the Giants, they would say, hey, you got an extra second round pick, you got an extra third round pick, and you still got one of the three elite wide receivers. You'll call that a good day if you're a Cardinals fan. But I think there'll be some who will be upset if they don't get Marvin Harrison. Absolutely.
Right. But I think more upset if you trade down to a position and don't get any of the three.
Yes.
You trade down. Yes. Okay, you got an extra first this year. You got an extra first next year. You got an extra third. You got an extra fifth. But you don't get Nabers, you don't get Harrison, you don't get Adunze.
But okay, are they justified in being upset about that? Or can you make the argument that that's the smart, that is a smart play for the Cardinals to continue
both.
To collect as many picks?
Both. Okay. Both, depending on who, I mean, listen, you just played the cut. These three guys are so highly rated. It's almost like these three guys can't miss. So these are great wide receivers, right? All indications are these are great wide receivers. If you trade down far enough with, say, I don't know, Minnesota or somebody, it's a really good chance that all three are gone. Really good chance. And now you're taking other players, probably good players, maybe a great player. We just don't know. You know, we just don't know. I mean, it takes time for this stuff to play out. You know, listen, when they traded and they got Calvin Pace and Brian Johnson, well, okay, it looks pretty good. You know, years later, you're like, okay, that sucked. So it does take time. But I think most of the experts who do this for a living are going to be like, okay, you passed on getting one of three great wide receivers. And, you know, and I think that they might get, you know, might get dinged a little bit on the grades because of that.
Here's one more from Lance Zierlein I want to play. And this is him saying that they'd all be great fits for Kyler Murray, but he's not even sure that should be the priority for the Cardinals. And I'll let him explain.
I'd be shocked if the Cardinals don't have their choice of the two. I don't think any other wide receiver is going to go inside the top three. Mm-hmm. But I am interested to see, you know, who they look at, who they feel like fits Kyler Murray the best, or they even doing anything with Kyler Murray in consideration. I mean, there's a chance, and maybe the smart move is not to draft a wide receiver for your quarterback. Draft him just for the organization, because you never know what's going to happen with that quarterback position. And anyway, all three of these guys would be good targets for Kyler, so it doesn't really matter.
I've thought about this. I've thought about this draft a lot, Gambo, but I haven't thought about this a lot. Should which one and how they fit with Kyler be a priority here? Or should you just take the best guy and not worry about...
Always take the best guy.
Okay.
Always take the best player.
I hadn't thought about it, but now that I'm thinking about it, you take the best guy. Don't worry about, well, this one's best for Kyler, let's take him. Well, a year from now, Kyler might not be your quarterback. 2 years from now, he might not be your quarterback. I don't know if you want to pigeonhole yourself like that, you know, but I hadn't really thought of it like that in that
regard. You just never know. You have to go get the best player.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, we are just about a day away from the final Coyotes game in Arizona for the very foreseeable future. What's it going to look like? What's the experience going to be like tomorrow? And is this really actually in the best interest of the NHL to move the Coyotes out of Phoenix? That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.
The Clubhouse Call-In with Burns and Gambo.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Every week we have an opportunity to catch up with a Diamondbacks player. And joining us right now on the Burns and Gambo show, a terrific outing last night, all kinds of fired up coming off the mound in one of those innings. Joining us here on the Burns and Gambo show to talk D-backs baseball with us, Diamondbacks reliever Bryce Jarvis, who joins us here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bryce, I'm Dave. This is Gambo. Welcome to the show, man. We appreciate the time.
What's up, guys? Appreciate you having me on.
Great job last night. I mean, really. I mean, you get that situation, runner on second. Bush, obviously, dangerous batter, walks, and then Cooper gets that single. But for you to get out of that bases-loaded jam without only giving up the one run, the two strikeouts to Gomes and Happ were terrific. But just take me through that inning and your mindset when you're pitching with the bases loaded.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're in that situation, you want to limit the damage and knowing that you know, our guys are going to have a chance in the bottom half of the inning to put up some runs. You want to limit the damage as much as you can. Starting with that runner on second, it's always going to be tough to put up a zero. But you know, after I gave up that first one, wanted to do everything I can to keep our team in it and give us a chance in that bottom half.
Could you pick a better guy to hit a ground ball to than Christian Walker at first base? I mean, with Toshman, you get that force at home. He's just so good defensively. I mean, that's a great player to have a ball hit to, isn't it?
100%. I mean, Walk's a steel trap over there. And I think if I could figure out a way to force ground balls to the three hole every time, I would do it.
If only you could do that. Absolutely. Bryce Jarvis is our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. I want to ask you about the ghost runner situation and as a relief pitcher and kind of in your role adjusting to being a relief pitcher. You certainly would never want to concede that guy, but given how the rules are set up, how do you approach that runner at second base knowing how easy it is for that run to score? It doesn't count as an earned run, but how do you kind of approach that knowing how easy it is for them to get that guy in?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think you have to stay on the attack. I'm not sure that anything gets better in the game of baseball when you approach it with, you know, timidity or cautiousness. I think you gotta go at the hitter in the box and trust that, you know, whatever swing and miss stuff you have is going to work in that situation and really focus on the batter in that situation.
Yeah. It's been a few years now. Do you like the rule?
I think it definitely accomplishes the job of speeding up the games and breaking these stalemates.
Good answer, Bryce. That's a good answer. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely does the job it's meant to do.
I'm sure you've been in a situation before. Ginkle throws the wild pitch, it bounces, Moreno can't locate it. How frustrating, how helpless do you feel as a pitcher when you know where the ball is, but your catcher doesn't know where the ball is?
Yeah, it's tough. That situation, there's a lot of moving parts, runners, batters, umpires. It's tough for sure, but it's all part of the game and one of those things you just gotta over communicate and you know, hope the bounce goes your way, honestly.
Six appearances for you so far this year. You've been very good with this team, and in I think it's three of them, you've gone more than two, you know, two or more innings. You pitched three against Colorado. Your ability as a former starter to be able to take some innings and some bulk innings and pitch two, three, four innings, how important is that for you and for this role on this team?
Yeah, I think anytime you can go multiple ups and be available for those situations, it just helps the team and helps me be more available for different situations. I can go those multiple ups. I can also pitch, you know, shorter outings and be available more frequently, kind of whatever the team needs. It's nice to be able to kind of be a Swiss Army knife and fill whatever role is called for.
What have they told you about, if anything, about your role within the organization and whether this role you're in now as a reliever, if that's your long-term goal, if that's what a short-term thing, what have they told you about kind of your future within the organization when it comes to that?
Not much in regards to future roles, kind of just more focused on the present and being versatile and, like I said, available to step up for kind of whatever situation arises in the here and now.
Did it take you a while to transition to this role? Did you have to adjust anything when you went from being a primarily starter to a reliever now?
Not really. Kind of took me back to where I was in college at Duke, and coming up as a freshman, I was in a similar role before I transitioned into being a weekend starter, and that was kind of the mindset I had to put myself in, is be available in whatever opportunities there are now, and then maybe in the future earn more innings and potentially transition back to a starter.
I've seen some of the pitchers, I think it was Nelson, relying on a lot of cutters, you, a Gallen at times. Tell me about that pitch for you. I know it was something you were working on a whole lot. How much have you developed the cutter in your arsenal?
Yeah, it's been a huge pitch for me this spring, and then in a few of my outings so far this year. It's something that I usually tinker with in the off season, and for whatever reason, this spring it caught more traction, and I felt comfortable enough to kind of solidify it in my arsenal of pitches. And I think in the role that I'm in, it's been a huge pitch, something that I can throw in zone and get weak contact with. And when it's really on, it even produces swing and miss, which is kind of the name of the game.
When you look at the injuries that you guys have suffered to some of the best defensive players on this team, Alec Thomas and Perdomo, does it change your approach to pitching? You still go out there and do everything the same? Because those are two of the best defensive players at their position, and with them out of the lineup, you guys obviously just not as strong defensively.
Those guys are definitely in a class of their own defensively, but from my perspective, nothing really changes. I know that we have a next man up mentality, and anybody that we put out there is going to be more than capable of making the plays necessary to win ball games. So from my end, nothing really changes.
All right, Bryce. Well, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for joining us. Best of luck the rest of the season. I'm sure we'll catch up with you at some point. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
For sure. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bryce.
All right, Bryce Jarvis, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. D-backs and the Cubs game two tonight. Tommy Henry on the mound for the Diamondbacks as they look to bounce back after last night's 3-2 loss in 11 innings. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, is it truly in the best interest of the NHL to move one of their teams from Phoenix to Salt Lake City? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.